to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on the Weekly, Orion Black quits Wizards of the Coast, open letter to Games Workshop, Critical Role controversy, D&D legacy disclaimers, and a new competitor for D&D. So Chris, I have a hypothetical for you.
Okay. I love these. Go.
So you were noticed on social media by Wizards of the Coast.
Okay.
And they give you a position.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they want you to do whatever you want to do to make D&D the game that you always wanted it to be. Do you think that your followers so far with social media are going to go along with this? Do you think you're going to get the sellout label almost immediately?
Me?
Yes.
I don't think I have that many followers. So the answer to that hypothetical is no.
Okay. And what would you try to change?
Oof. Okay. You've said D&D.
Right. Yeah. Wizards of the Coast. D&D 5e.
Given the fact I don't really like that game a lot, I also think I know where this is going.
Okay.
So
that was the situation for an employee, Orion Black. They announced that they will no longer be working for D&D, basically citing the corporate culture at the company. So it was a very long, I believe it's on Twitter?
Yes, it was the twit longer announcement. Yeah.
The announcement began, it's July 3rd. I no longer work for Wizards of the Coast. I no longer work on D&D, the little that I did. This is going to be a long thread and my last for quite a while. So basically going through the whole kind of course of things. The beginning was wonderful. I can make money doing role-playing games. I'm very happy to be hired. And then, like I was suggesting to you, like I think they saw the possibility of what they could change about the hobby. Like from the inside, maybe they could have some effect.
Right.
And then reality comes crashing down because this is a corporate job and you're dealing with a publicly traded company and there is no changing the status quo. I mean, the status quo is so deeply entrenched in what the shareholders want, what kind of performance they want, what kind of sales on books that they want. And so it was very disillusioning.
Right.
I have a lot of empathy, but I also suspect that they were a little naive going into this job, thinking that they could make a difference. And basically, I think having a following, having a social media following that was calling them a sellout, you know, basically,
oh, really?
if you're not going to do this, if you're not going to follow through on, you know, what you have kind of presented as your, what you've presented yourself as on social media, then you're a sellout. You have to bring this down from the inside. You have to see change. And, you know, basically they said, and I think in a pretty poignant way, so the two reasons that they were happy was doing something they loved, and also to make D&D welcoming to the millions who are scorned by it.
Okay.
So I think for Orion, it became pretty clear pretty quickly that they were a diversity hire.
Right.
And that's something I think that then they felt their work wasn't being taken very seriously. They were kind of ignored. There were claims that work had been stolen.
Right. And I read that as well.
Yeah. Presented as someone else's when it was actually theirs. And I think this is a really sad and difficult situation, but it's inevitable. I think you could make a list. Okay. I will make a list.
Sure.
A politician that wants to bring change to a corrupt system, a prostitute with a heart of gold, a beat cop that just wants to make a difference, and a publicly traded company that cares about marginalized people. This is a list of things that do not exist.
Okay. I was wondering where that list was going. Right. Okay.
I really think that you're just headed for disappointment. You're headed for, and this sounds like it had a real emotional toll, a real, you know, maybe probably physical and emotional toll on this individual. And can expect, I mean, I think change in an industry like tabletop is going to happen from the outside, from smaller companies that are offering options, which we may get to later.
Right. Yeah. This kind of dovetails. Yeah.
They're going to offer options and you're not going to be able to do it from an established intellectual property that has existed for
however
many years, decades, and that, you know, has existed since the late 60s. It's just not going to be possible to see the kind of change that you want. And I really feel sorry for someone that is going to run headlong into that.
I think we kind of have the same take on this.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would add is on social media, Twitter, I've been following Orion for a while prior to them getting hired by Wizards of the Coast. Like, I haven't had that much interaction with them, but as far as I could see, they were always about sort of inclusivity and trying to change things to be more inclusive, which is exactly what I said, and I'm not saying it very well. It's not as if Wizards of the Coast hired them, I think, without knowing this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think that does kind of, well, back up their feeling that they were a diversity hire. I guess on the other hand, I think Wizards should have expected that to happen given the kind of person Orion was on social media, right? And I think, again, I think I worded that very poorly. So it's not a but, it's more like an and.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know what Wizards expected expected.
Yeah. And it seems to be the tipping point after their treatment at the company, the tipping point was the inclusivity statement that they made. Yep. And so like this, that's it.
I'm also forgetting names, but I'll point out that Orion wasn't the only or hasn't been the only person to point out sort of treatment like this at Wizards of the Coast. Mm. There's another person who I believe worked in some capacity for the magic part, and they kind of said similar things. Mm. But I guess, again, you can kind of give a similar answer of this is a publicly traded company. Mm. How much change can you really do from the inside?
Right.
Which is kind of defeatist, but...
But at the same time, I mean, if you want to have maximum effect, you need to be... your approach needs to be as effective as possible. And I don't think... The one thing that I wasn't clear about this statement was, were they an in-office hire or was this a contract work? Like they were
Not sure.
Okay.
The implication I got was they were an in-office.
Okay. That would make this make a lot more sense because there was mention of contractors and how contractors of color were treated differently or have been abused. Their work has been abused. And I do have a problem with that because contractors in general are abused position. I don't think you can differentiate between how abused you are. So in general, I was like, I don't really think you can say it's worse. I mean, you can say it's worse if they specifically did, if it was a diversity hire and they're going to treat you differently just because they want some number or they want some name to put in credits of their books. And it seems like, you know, Wizards of the Coast has been doing nothing but getting bad press recently.
Well, it's a real easy way to not get bad press. Don't do crappy things.
So what would be an alternative to something like D&D? So you had mentioned something.
Well, not to add more salt to this, but recently a lot of people online have been talking about this game called Quest. A couple weeks ago, prior to all this, and I was interested in it for a little bit, kind of after this statement and after a statement put out by the company that made Quest, and I'm forgetting names, I'm a little, or not skeptical, but things are a little tainted. It turns out the creator of the Quest RPG is like an executive editor at The Verge magazine. Like that's nothing negative in and of itself, just people in, again, the kind of indie TTRPG sphere are pointing out, regardless of how good a game Quest is, you already had a significant amount of money to promote and market this game. And that's not a negative. It was just more of a, what other games could have done this if they also had the money to market themselves as effectively as Quest. And like, I looked at the Quest book and it's like a beautiful physical book. They've even optimized the PDF so that the layouts are different to try and take advantage of different devices and what would be better in physical and in digital. I think the creator of Quest just announced some initiative to provide the core book free to like elementary schools that want it. They're specifically trying to market it to people outside the hobby and to make it as user-friendly as possible. Like, I don't even think they call it an RPG. They call it an adventure game. And people have been talking... That's probably specifically because even if you don't know what an RPG is, you know what D&D is, and people outside the hobby tend to conflate those two. For even more market penetration, let's call Quest something different.
Right.
A statement, I guess a couple days ago, put out by the creator of Quest, they specifically called out the 50% cut that the DMs Guild marketing thing inflicts on creators. They are specifically looking to set up some kind of, as they put it, market that's some kind of market platform that's similar to Itch, where the fees are going to be almost nothing for people to produce and promote work. That's the part that kind of got me and other people a little bit of a, or gave us a little bit of a red flag.
Right.
Because I have nothing against anyone promoting their game or using it as a springboard for other stuff, but it kind of said, like, it felt like you went right from making one game to now talking about you want to make a marketplace.
Right.
And it kind of seems like a startup company.
Yeah.
Which, so again, I'm not saying that's bad. It just kind of pinged this little red flag for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like the Epic Game Store for tabletop that could be, they just kind of, a company just kind of inserted themselves with a lot of Chinese funding to be a competitor for Steam for people doing PC gaming. People should kind of pay attention to where their funding is coming from and how they're actually going to do this, because if it is that same exact model.
That's the other thing. Like, on the one hand, I appreciate the creator saying, you know what, we don't really know if we could do this or how we could do this, but this is our goal. Maybe in the past, I would have been a bit more like, oh, yeah, this sounds great. I mean, you're admitting to knowing what you don't know. Now it just kind of seems like a little bit more like another person with money wanting to do something and thinking that the market is going to be the solution for that.
Right, right.
So again, like not trying to dump on Quest, it just doesn't seem as, to me, as great as it did initially. And I haven't even looked at the book yet. And that's the other thing, like, because shipping to Japan is like real expensive because it only ships in the States for right now.
Ah, I see.
Not to add more salt to this episode, but sorry about that.
Well, let's continue the salt fest with an open letter to Games Workshop.
Ooh.
We have a letter that was posted, an open letter posted to Games Workshop, I think on, yeah, just various social media, probably Reddit and all kinds of wonderful places. To whom it may concern, I am one of the silent, one of those that lurk quietly in the background and immerse themselves into this hobby that I love. Without sparing much attention to the community around me, I have sat and watched as the fandom and the franchise grew and changed, and not once did I feel the need to truly get involved beyond a few random comments until now.
Nobody can see me shaking my head with a pained expression on my face because this just reads terribly.
Right. Today, my perception of the franchise shifted irrevocably. So this, of course, is a reaction to the inclusivity statement.
It was either going to go that way or like a very poorly worded, I don't know. But yeah, that's what I expected. Yeah.
So there are several paragraphs.
Oh, geez.
First sentence of every paragraph is all caps, bold, exclamation point, Warhammer is for everyone. And then the kind of complaint. And so basically talking about their history with the hobby, going in as a kid, seeing painted Warhammer Fantasy battles on tables. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I love this. And they're spending their whole life devoted to it. And basically the biggest complaint is...
Black Space Marines?
No. You would think that. No, it was the last line. If not, you will not be missed. So Warhammer is for everyone. And then they repeat, if not, you will not be missed. Because I even pointed out that it's a little sinister. It's a little, you know, by Felicia kind of at the end.
You know what? I'm going to jump in there. Like, it is, but like there have been a couple games, notably, I think the game I Hunt by Olivia Hill. And I think they started the Olivia Hill rule, which it expressly states in the rules, like, if you are a Nazi, this game is not for you. Mm-hmm. We don't want you playing this game. And that Warhammer is for everyone, that the official announcement is kind of a bit like, okay, we're going to be inclusive, you know, we want everyone to play, unless you're a person who doesn't want to play with everyone, right? So that my feeling is that you will not be missed. The same type of people who get mad at that are the same type of people who get mad at the, hey, no Nazis, transphobes, or homophobia rule, where it's like, if you're mad about this rule, you're probably one of the people we are talking about that we don't want playing this game. Right. So Warhammer is for everyone. How do you take issue with that and then write like a 3 or 4 paragraph long screed unless you're one of the people who people don't want to play with?
Yeah, no, I definitely see your point. I think it's probably just a kind of a generational clash of kind of the political terms in which people put things in, because I think, the more millennial kind of attitude is that just like, you know, we don't want you, we don't need you. And this is a publicly traded, purely capitalist company. And that's a very odd thing to say. It's like, we need your money. We need, you know, Warhammer is for everyone, especially all of their money. I mean,
I agree. I guess back to my point, though. Like, if you have bad actors, I forget what the thing I'm thinking of is like the paradox of tolerance, right? Like, if you have a group that lets everybody in, eventually you're going to get bad actors in the group. And unless you moderate those bad actors, they are going to drive the reasonable and tolerant people out of the group. And you're going to have a much smaller group, you're going to have, it's like a Reddit channel, right? You're going to have a group that's only like trolls and bigots. So while Games Workshop is a publicly traded company, I think it behooves them to kick out bad actors by saying, we don't want you, so that more people would join the hobby and not be pushed out by these bad actors. Like if you're, like, I don't have numbers, but like, if you kick out like 1 or 2 bigots, how many people are going to stay in that group and spend money? Like, it's going to be more than 1 or 2, right?
Right.
So you're going to get more money out of the people who come in because you have a safe community than the few bad actors you keep than where if you just let everybody in.
I think Games Workshop, just basically in the Warhammer setting, because of the grim, dark nature of it, it does attract people that like the ugliness of it. And if you have a game that basically has mechanics for genocide and exterminate the Xenos, you know, it's like, the message.
We've talked about this before, and as much as I like Warhammer and 40K, like, it's like, okay, everybody's bad. And I think they even said it in their statement, like, just because this fictional future is super grim dark, that doesn't mean that's what we want to see in reality, right? So the people kind of get those two things mixed up. I mean, it's like horror movies or all this other stuff, right? Like, you can have horror without being bigots.
They're in an interesting situation, and I think something else we can talk about, D&D is in kind of the same situation. The origins of, and the, you know, kind of their inspirations and the setting that they're using comes from a place that's not particularly inclusive. It's kind of, we need to defeat the evil in the world that, you know, we got to kill them before they kill us. And and then to the extent that you're dungeon delving, you're just a bunch of...
Who are those people? I don't know, but let's go kill them and take their stuff.
Start stabbing. So, of course, then to try to deal with this, D&D has released a legacy disclaimer that they're that they're now putting on all of their older material. And I sound like I'm just going to be repeating myself every single week. I mean, I respect that they're not going to edit. They're not going to just take a black marker. But at the same time, you still want to make money off of this? I mean,
that's the thing.
So it's just like, Cthulhu. It's like, if there's no if there's no acceptable version of, and they're talking about, you know, death of the author and all this like nonsense, removing it. If you want to make money off of something that you consider its origins to be in racism and xenophobia, maybe you shouldn't.
Right.
Maybe you should create a new property, put it down, and let people that can kind of parse that and deal with it, actually what has already been produced, what already exists, instead they need that property. They need that recognizable, because it's the Xerox, it's the Kleenex of, you know, tabletop role-playing. They will not let it go, so they're just going to just keep hammering at it. So this isn't quite to that extent as the editing that they're doing on current publications, but they're doing a disclaimer. And it's similar to what you said, like, you know, Tom and Jerry cartoons and things.
I think, like, I've seen this before, it looks like they just pretty much copied word for word the Warner Brothers thing. And I think I found out something interesting about that Warner Brothers boilerplate thing, where I was praising it before, and I guess by me praising it and then Watsy using the exact same one, I guess that means I have to praise Watsy, otherwise I'm a hypocrite.
Yes.
But I think I found out that the Warner Brothers disclaimer did not go over that well with people. Like, it was not well received, and it was, I think, maybe like a test to see if Warner Brothers could like repackage and then kind of re-release some cartoons that had problematic elements in them. And the result ended up being no. Mm-hmm. So Watsy copying that one might not work out either, since they probably copied a bad one.
Right. Like you said, it's almost exactly word for word. So maybe they were listening to it last week. So we recognize that some of the legacy content available on this website does not reflect the values of D&D franchise today. Some of the older content may reflect ethnic, racial, and gender prejudices that were commonplace in American society at the time. These depictions were wrong then and are wrong today. So that's the line sounds exactly the same.
I think I read also that Watsy puts, if not that disclaimer, puts a disclaimer on basically every digital title prior to 2014.
Wow.
And I don't know the authenticity of that statement, but if that is true, it kind of turns it into nothing, right? Like, if you put it on everything prior to a certain date, then you're not recognizing that certain things are more or less problematic than others. You just blanket it.
They're just anticipating the sliding scale and people digging through this archive and saying, well, wait a minute. This portrayal of elves is not, I mean, they're just anticipating, like, you can't bulletproof that older content.
No, I guess, which kind of gets to what you said before about Cthulhu, and Lovecraft, like, as people have pointed out, the original Oriental Adventures is still for sale on DriveThruRPG, and you can still buy it. And at some point, as a company, I think you either have to say, we're fine profiting off this stuff that is problematic and take your lumps with it, or stop profiting from it and say, you know what? You're right. Okay, either it's going away, put it back in the Watsy vault. You know, like Disney had a vault and you could only get certain VHS cassettes every certain years, right? So toss Oriental Adventures back in a vault and stop taking money for it.
But if I can't get a copy of that, how can I follow the 26-episode podcast that page by page goes through it and dunks on all those white men that don't know what they're talking about?
You don't need to follow along paragraph by paragraph. And if you do, I'm sure you could rip a copy from BitTorrent or something. You don't actually rip a copy from a pirate site, but whatever.
So what you're saying is I need to start like an Amish-like community and choose a date of like 1996 and then no RPGs published after that date. Will we ever?
Sure. If that's what you want to do, yeah.
So we have buttons. We don't have hooks instead of buttons, but we don't have anything published after the 96. And like I was saying, that wonderful list that I made, these companies really don't give a damn. They're just trying to quiet this down, and they're just going to, was this enough? How about this? Well, we'll do this. We'll do this. Are you quiet yet? Are you good yet? Are you good yet? It's never going to end. And it shouldn't end. I mean, there should always be criticism of how people are depicting different cultures and different, you know, somebody should always be critical, but they shouldn't be an unreasonable critic. I mean, you should always have a voice of dissent. You should always have a voice keeping
you. You're a Japanese company.
Right. But keeping you honest and like paying attention to like, you know, what damage you could be doing.
Getting back to the beginning, the statement by Orion Black, I think that was part of the problem, or not part of the problem, but that was part of what got tied up in that whole statement. Like, I think WotC hiring them was a form of WotC saying, "Is this enough?
Yes.
Will our critics shut up now because we've hired this person?"
Right.
And then I think Orion was trying to be the voice of dissent, saying, "Okay, you know, you kind of can't do this, or maybe you should veer away from this or do stuff," and felt that they were not being listened to.
Right.
In which case, it kind of backs them up. Statement of being just a diversity hire.
Mm-hmm. It is very frustrating, and there's not a quick answer. There's not going to be easy change. It's going to be a slow process of just paying attention and, you know, people kind of, it's going to be having a lot of people kind of aging out of the culture and not participating anymore for, I think,
interesting.
Yeah, things to really take effect. As long as this is present, I think kind of the public consciousness, things do change, and it's just not a fast, it's just, you're not going to get fast results. And unfortunately, it's tied to social media and the internet, which is an immediate thing, which gives you quick responses, which gives you dopamine and endorphins that reward you for having an effect. And it's not like that. It's not going to be like that. Quickly, the Critical Role controversy.
Oh, no.
Our usual critter update. And this has a lot, you know, this is similar to the idea of the contractors.
Right. So, I think I know where this is going. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were approached by somebody a couple of weeks ago. An individual made a statement online claiming that they provided work for Critical Role without payment. Mm-hmm. So Critical Role took these allegations seriously, and they started to investigate. And they found that the individual voluntarily reached out to Critical Role with concerns about his own experience with online bullying. They don't condone it. An employee within the company listened for the sole purpose of being an understanding ear. They had correspondence on Discord, and let's see. So nothing in their communication established any professional employment or contractual relationship. Mm-hmm. And then after months of casual contract, the individual made an inquiry about to an employee of Critical Role about the possibility of being engaged by Critical Role as a consultant for the company. So they got comfortable and I guess were requesting a consultant job. Upon receiving that request, they were immediately declined. This was so it was just important for them to kind of keep the clear boundaries of, you know, what's actually going on. So they said they were declined. This person claims they weren't, and that they need to be paid because they had some back and forth with Critical Role employees. And so they released a statement, and I was reading part of that statement. So they released a statement and they ended it with, "Don't forget to love each other."
Okay.
Signed Critical Role. This is growing pains, I think, that they're going to experience. They're wildly successful. There's a lot of money. And once you are a target, once you're kind of, you know, very visible and at the top, people are going to come out of the woodwork. And especially when you have a fan base that kind of grew on the internet, you're going to have people that have this connection to your property, that have been drawing fan art for years, that, you know, feel so connected to what they're doing. I'm involved, right? Like, I'm basically an employee because every episode I have drawn what you guys are doing. So, you know, these are the things that they're going to start having to deal with, and they're going to have to start upsetting some people.
Well, I've seen elements of this controversy online, like only the edges of it, and I'm not a Critical Role in the fandom, so I don't really know the exact details. What I was picking up is that this person said that Critical Role responded to sort of a claim that they weren't actually making. Or like the answer Critical Role gave was about something that was kind of related, but spun their request to seem unreasonable.
I see.
And again, I don't know details, but I think a couple people had, I think, decent responses where some of the responsibility is still on Critical Role because it seems like they still present themselves as a group of friends recording a podcast for people like them.
Right.
when that is no longer the case.
Mm-hmm.
They're now a company, and whether it's intentional or not, I've seen people claim that Critical Role is kind of capitalizing on that parasocial relationship, and that's why they kind of keep up this illusion that they're just a group of friends getting together to play a game that happens to be streamed instead of what's now a fairly large independent company.
Right. And they just happen to have Funko Pops made of their characters.
Yeah, comic books, Funko Pops, animated series on Amazon.
It just happens.
Just like us, right? Like our home group has that too, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Like a lot of things that start out well-intentioned on the internet, once they become very successful and very big, people are going to have to start getting hurt because they're going to realize, oh, this is a capitalist venture. Okay, well, let's put away all the...
Way back to the Kickstarter that Critical Role did for the animated series,
mm-hmm.
that was a lot of the criticism of them I was seeing. Like some of it was sour grapes, I'm sure, but a lot of people were saying it was sour grapes when the criticism I was seeing was, okay, stop acting like this little group of friends.
Yeah.
You now have an animated series that made $12 million on Kickstarter, which isn't all money going to you, but start acting like a company now
mm-hmm.
instead of continuing to kind of not necessarily string people along, but to put up this sort of false persona.
Yeah. It's going to be hard because you can't really pivot from that. That's what people expect. That's what people want. So they're going to lose, you know, a big chunk of fans and probably original fan base. Maybe this is the experience that all of these companies are having.
Yeah, maybe.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. I also restarted up my blog. There's only like 2 posts on it. but I did port all the Fantastic Fate resources stuff over there as well.
Cool.
And there'll be links in the show notes because I don't even remember what my address is. How about you?
I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon. So I draw 2 of those every week and I live stream that on YouTube and Twitch. So you can find that at abusecartoons.com. Follow the cartoon on Twitter at abusecartoons. And the archive of that cartoon is on gocomics.com/domesticabuse. If you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com is the website. You can follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. If you'd like to support what we're doing, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/idleredhands. So talking about things, social change not happening quickly, I just wanted to read, there's a great quote from Hunter S. Thompson from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas that kind of talks about the disappointment of kind of the counterculture, peace movement, social revolution of the 60s and 70s just not happening, not being what everyone wanted. And just as a reminder, that's what's going on now. And people in 2050 are going to look back at kind of the current situation of, kind of social reform and activism. And they may feel the same way because it's a long, difficult thing to accomplish. So let me read this. Maybe it meant something. Maybe not in the long run, but no explanation, no mix of words or music or memories can touch that sense of knowing that you were there and alive in that corner of time and the world, whatever it meant. And that, I think, was the handle, that sense of inevitable victory over the forces of old and evil, not in any mean or military sense. We didn't need that. Our energy would simply prevail. There was no point in fighting on our side or theirs. We had the momentum. We were riding the crest of a high and beautiful wave. So now, less than 5 years later, you can go up on a steep hill in Las Vegas and look west. And with the right kind of eyes, you can almost see the high water mark, that place where the wave finally broke and rolled back. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.
call.